There's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with the people running the money at the Federal Reserve. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. A senior figure at America's central bank is stepping down early. William Dudley will leave the presidency of the New York Fed after 8 years. The Fed plays a pivotal role in managing the nerve center of America's monetary system. Let's get some context from economist Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives in New York.
He had a little bit over a year left in his term, and I think he made the decision to start the process early so that they could find the right person and get that person in place and ensure a smooth transition. So I wouldn't read too much into it. It's good management.
All right. So Janet Yellen's term expires in January. Jay Powell will succeed her, we now know. The vice chair, Stanley Fischer, has left. Does that materially affect our home mortgages of the future?
Not in the near term. I think that we have had very strong, solid management. So the framework for setting interest rates will be very much in place. And that means very slow interest rate increases. But the composition of the team will matter going forward. For example, who manages the next recession if and when it hits.
And we should mention this with William Dudley leaving the New York Fed, that's the Federal Reserve outpost that has outsized clout in the system, not just because it's on Wall Street.
Yes. First of all, the president is a permanent voter on policy, whereas the other regional banks have rotating voting responsibilities, and they manage the $4 trillion balance sheet. And so the president's decisions and views on what to do with that balance sheet matter a lot. So the New York Fed president is one of the most important jobs on the Federal Open Market Committee.
All right. Economist Julia Coronado at Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We got confirmation today that Broadcom, a smartphone components maker, wants to buy out a big rival, Qualcomm, for the equivalent of $103 billion in cash and stock. Qualcomm apparently cannot stand this idea and is reportedly putting up barriers to try to fend off the bid. U.S. antitrust regulators will also take a close look at this. The Saudi government is calling it an anti-corruption drive. Several prominent international business figures and princes of the royal family are under arrest in Riyadh today. This includes a billionaire who's a major shareholder of Citigroup and has big stakes in Twitter, Apple, Lyft, and more. John Svakianakis is at the Gulf Research Center in Riyadh.
Prince Walid bin Talal was a very well-known businessman in the West, especially in the U.S. and other circles. But at the same time, he never held a position of power. So, yes, he did speak his mind. But at the same time, things now have changed, and somebody else is dictating how Saudi Arabia is going to look.
That somebody else is the Saudi crown prince, 32-year-old Mohammed bin Salman, who's been trying to overhaul Saudi Arabia's economy and, to some extent, the society there. Wednesday marks 1 year since the presidential election. The president's agenda may be running behind on repealing Obamacare or sweeping infrastructure improvements, but the administration has been rolling back government regulations across the board. So-called big government is a hot-button issue, but we never seem to talk about the origins of this culture of regulation, for better or for worse. Chrissy Clark from our Wealth and Poverty Desk is exploring this in the new season of Marketplace's documentary podcast, The Uncertain Hour. Chrissy, it's a story that sticks to the roof of your mouth.
Yes. So some of them are about peanut butter. Specifically, I've been looking into this epic 12-year battle that started in the 1950s to regulate what percentage of peanuts should be in peanut butter. And it became this caricature of how inefficient our regulations and government bureaucracy can be. But when I started digging into what really happened, I realized that it raised all these philosophical questions about who regulations protect and who has the power and access to write them. And the story has industrial espionage and a David and Goliath courtroom showdown between the peanut butter industrial complex and a 1950s housewife. So, of course, I couldn't resist.
Well, who was this homemaker?
So Ruth Desmond, she started as a regular homemaker, but she became this powerful food safety activist and eventually earned the nickname the Peanut Butter Grandma, who, quote, spits in the corporate eye.
Huh.
And she first got interested in food safety after her husband was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And she doesn't mess around. Listen to how her daughter describes her reaction when doctors were ignoring her warnings about her husband's reaction to anesthesia before a surgery.
So she actually rode the gurney into the surgical room, laying across his body, saying, "You will not give him anesthesia."
That's the kind of person she was.
The kind of person she was. She was determined.
A fighter, clearly.
Yeah, and so after her husband's diagnosis, Ruth started researching potential causes of cancer and was shocked by what she found about chemicals being used in the food industry. And just a little context here. So after World War II, food was going through this huge transformation. Manufacturers were experimenting with chemical preservatives, farmers were using synthetic pesticides for the first time, and regulation hadn't quite caught up with all that yet. So Ruth started pushing the Food and Drug Administration to tighten regulations to better protect consumers. And that's what eventually got her involved in peanut butter. And that fight is what the first two episodes of this season of The Uncertain Hour are all about.
All right. Can't wait. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark, thank you.
Thank you.
Go to marketplace.org and search Uncertain Hour and you get a taste of this. I'm David Brancaccio. Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.